There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile on this beautiful Friday, rolling into the big Mardi Gras weekend. Live local talk over the next couple of hours. Glad you're here, and we'll talk more about the phone line and the text line and our guests coming up throughout the next 2 hours in a second. Leadoff batter, though, check in with the mayor of Dauphin Island, Jeff Collier. I've been putting reports up on Twitter throughout the morning after the news came out that there was a barge that had come loose going through the ICW near the between the spans, I guess. Well, I'll tell you what, where on the Dauphin Island Bridge, Mayor Collier, did this happen? Was it in the ICW? Was it north or south? Where was this?
No, it was actually north of that. And actually, Sean, I believe, the best I can tell, I don't know yet all the details, but it was a barge that had a crane on it, a construction crane. And I believe it actually broke loose and came down from up further north in Mobile Bay. I don't believe it was actually traveling in the ICW at all. It looked to be more of a construction barge to me. And it actually struck the flat part of the bridge, if you will, up to where the north end. Your listeners are probably aware that curve that's in the bridge when you first come onto the bridge from the north going southbound. It hit in that curve area. And, you know, of course, we've had these strong winds blowing from the north here in the last couple of nights, and I think that coupled with the falling tide just kind of exacerbated the situation. But it came from up in somewhere further north in Mobile Bay, and then the conditions actually brought it down and ran it into the support pilings of the bridge.
This is why it's so good to get you on the phone to get the real information. And I guess before we even go further into that, the good news is now you just reported that the bridge is good to go?
Yes. Just got a text from the ALDOT official right before we came on the air, and they have now opened both lanes. They are telling us that there was more just superficial, they even use the word cosmetic-type damages, so there doesn't appear to be any substantial structural damages to the bridge. They may have to make some minor-type repairs, but it looks like, you know, for the most part, we dodged a bullet here and just had about a 2.5 or 3 hour a bit of an inconvenience, if you will, when the bridge was actually closed.
So I've been talking to, you know, lots of folks like you and my friends on Dauphin Island, and a combination of things happening. Some folks like you were off the island when the bridge was closed, and then I had friends who were on the island and said, "Hey, man, I was going to come to Mobile a little bit, but I got to wait here because they're not letting us across the bridge."
Yeah, that's right. It just reminds us. Obviously, we take the bridge for granted, and of course, this morning the other thing was that the ferry wasn't running because it was so windy. The ferry just started running at 11 o'clock. So for a while there, we had, you know, we were just kind of landlocked there, at least for those that were on the island, kind of like it was in the old days, you know, in the pre-bridge era, or even certainly during the post-Frederick days.
But, well, I will say this, though. I know it's an inconvenience, but if I'm going to be stuck somewhere around here, Dauphin Island's a great place to be.
Yeah,
I'll take that.
I was thinking that. You know, it wasn't a good time for me to be off the island. I had to go for a personal reason, and, you know, no sooner than I got off, I wasn't 10 minutes off the island, and the dispatcher called me to tell me about it, and I'm like, wow, you know. So, and then, of course, trying to deal with all this, getting in touch with ALDOT and communicating with our police department and having a lot of citizens reaching out, texting, and calling, it got busy, as you can imagine, for a while there. But I really want to give a shout-out as well to our friends with ALDOT. I mean, they responded very timely and put a lot of resources in it and responded to the situation, because we were the ones that had – we reported it. You know, we We were made aware of it. We immediately called ALDOT to report the situation because it's their bridge and their responsibility. And then once we hand it off to them, it's theirs. I mean, they have to check it out, and they have to determine when it can and can't be open. And so they did a really fantastic job to come down and get things back flowing because, you know, you've got issues with school, you know, school kids coming and going. Mm-hmm. And that, by the way, Sean, that's probably one of the biggest winners I've heard so far today. The kids at the elementary school on Dauphin Island, they get their lunches carried over from the mainland each day, and they couldn't get there today, so they had to default and have local island pizza. So I'm sure it's a good day at Dauphin Island Elementary.
The kids cheered on that news for sure. Right. Joining us, talking to Mayor Jeff Collier there on Dauphin Island. So let's go back to the situation again, because this has been told so many times on social media, but I like getting it from you. The real story is that it wasn't that there was a barge attached to a push boat that got loose. This was just a barge that was coming in from the north. Do you know where, like Alabama Port or further up the bay? Or
I don't know. I don't. And I would expect it maybe is up around at least the Fowl River area, maybe even further. I don't really know at this point. But it was looked like to be more of a construction barge with a fairly large crane attached to it. And it apparently came loose from its moorings, wherever it came from, and it made its way down Mobile Bay and ended up on the east side of the Dauphin Island Bridge due to the strong winds and falling tides that brought it our way. And fortunately, it appears that according to ALDOT, there's no major structural damage to the bridge, and so they've done their inspections, and they just recently, no more than 10 minutes ago, have reopened both lanes as we speak.
All right, good news. So both lanes open and back to life as usual on the Sunset Capital of Alabama.
Back to life being good on Dauphin Island. Thank you, Sean.
All right, Mayor Collier, appreciate your time. So there you go. I've had phone ringing all through the morning, people asking about all that, and it's best just to find it out firsthand. So we always appreciate hearing from the mayor of Dauphin Island. All right, coming up on today's show, lots to talk about here, and usually it'll be Mondays and Fridays when I have a chance at getting members of the legislature when they're back home in district and they're not in Montgomery, and it's a treat. I got to tell you, this member of the state legislature is my favorite person in Montgomery, and I'd love to talk to him, off the air a whole bunch, and love to get his insight into what happens in Montgomery and the session so far. Representative from District 95, Steve McMillan, joining us in studio. Thanks for being here. Good to see you here, and happy Mardi Gras.
Good to be here, and thank you for the kind words.
It is a situation so far in Montgomery that it seems like the governor came out in her State of the State address, laid out these policies, these ideas, these pushes here, and they don't, to me, look like it's a perfect jigsaw puzzle fit with what the legislature's working. It's close. It's like that part of a puzzle that is almost like the part you need to make the puzzle, but not perfectly. Is that a fair assessment, that y'all are on the same pages, but that doesn't exactly mesh up the same?
Timing, I think, is a critical thing right now.
Right.
And I don't blame Representative Klaus, who's had to deal with the general fund budget and short revenue for years now. I don't blame him for wanting to do something different and get some additional revenue. We are in pretty good shape with the general fund, but we always need more money there. Public is probably aware the growth revenues don't go to the general fund typically, but when we started getting the sales tax from out-of-state vendors, that made a huge difference. It's been bumping around $100 million.
Okay, let's stop for a second, because I know that I'm talking about it a bunch. I know you just mentioned it, so people understand how it works, you know, outside the education trust fund, so general fund money, not funded by the growth taxes, like ETF is, and also earmarked at what I consider a ridiculous level.
Yep.
I mean, how much, when y'all are working in the House of Representatives, how much of that do you get to, how much of the total general fund do y'all have a say in whatsoever? Is it 6-7%?
Something in that range. I hear 94%, 96%, somewhere in the 5% range that we have discretion over.
Now, I think, Representative McMillan, I think there's a lot of people who don't, well, I'll say it over and over again so they realize that our system has it to where Y'all, if y'all are trying to fix something in Montgomery, fix something for the state, move something, allocate, it is just it's a less than 10%, less than 7% amount that y'all can even work with.
That's great. And when you consider the number of state agencies who have to budget based on anticipating matching funds.
All right, I hope a barge didn't hit our transmitter right there. I don't know what happened there. I think we're good. The transmitter's back open for business.
I'm impressed you fixed it so quick.
Yeah, don't tell people my secrets. I can do it from right here in the studio. No, but we're talking about the funding here and how much of the general fund you even have a say in, and it's a small amount.
And as I was saying, when you have to consider the amount of money you need for federal matching funds, that limits it even more.
So y'all are tasked with effectively changing things in our state or making things better or allocating money based on the need year in and year out, but the tool you're given is a extremely small part of the budget.
Particularly the general fund budget.
Yes, the smallest.
Yeah, and that covers the largest number of agencies as far as individual agencies.
Now there's some agencies in there that are taking the lion's share of that, right? Something we're talking about when we talk about prison reform in a little bit.
Medicaid.
All right, I don't know. The barge keeps hitting us, but so you said Medicaid and corrections.
Of course, you got corrections and then public safety and Alabama law enforcement.
That's all coming out of this part of the budget of the general fund.
That's great.
And these are very big programs and things that make big difference in the life of Alabamians.
Essential services. Absolutely. No doubt about it.
And those are the ones that are the revenue coming in is not the growth tax. The growth tax is in the education trust fund.
I tell you what always surprises people, and you may or may not even be aware of it. You know what the largest revenue source is for the state general fund?
I do not know.
Insurance premium taxes.
The largest
source of revenue for the general fund.
Insurance premium taxes, at what percent is that collected? Is it
17%, I think, so 20% in that range.
The companies running insurance in the state of Alabama pay that percentage to the state.
Insurance consumers.
Well, we all pay it, but I'm saying it's like who directs it? Oh, absolutely, we the consumer pays it, but that's how the checks are directed from those insurance companies to the state. That's the biggest.
Largest single source of revenue. It has consistently been that way for years and years.
It's an eye-opener. Listen, we're going to have a lot of eye-opening moments when you have Representative McMillan in here. We're going to talk about money in the form of the lottery. We talk about prisons here as well, some of the issues facing our state and the House and Senate in Montgomery as they're back in session and dealing with some of the things that we've discussed here last year. Some new items, but some things, what's old is new again. What was in last session is back.
Happens occasionally.
Yeah, back for more. All right, coming right back. More Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Friday. And always great to talk to Representative Steve McMillan, District 95. These are the days of the week I can get those folks back home from Montgomery and kind of debrief them on what's been happening in the last week and so far in session in Montgomery. And one of the discussions that you and I've had so many times, but listeners on the station are asking about is, where are we with the lottery? Where are you have, you know, Steve Klaus's bill? Where are we with that? You know, it was last year. It seemed odd to me. Correct me here, because you do, and I like that. That I was surprised that things passed more quickly out of the Senate last year and didn't move much in the House. That I always had the idea that things would move faster in the House and go to the Senate to be put on ice. But it seemed different. Is that fair?
That's fair, and I can tell you what's going on. Not even behind the scenes, it's not a well-kept secret. The Speaker does a real good job of protecting the House members from controversial votes unless he knows has a good, solid vote count, because he doesn't want to bring something up and have people vote for it and have it hurt them politically when they stuck their neck out to do what the right thing, so to speak.
So people understand this. So the Speaker is not wanting to have members of the House have to vote on something that's not a slam dunk.
That's right. You don't really know much of how things can change. But,
right.
If he feels good that it just won't pass, he's not going to cause us to take a vote on something that would be detrimental.
So, will y'all be taking a vote on it this year?
Oh, if they're counting votes, and of course, Representative Klaus is. I mean, that's what you do if you got a close issue. You count your votes and try to. One of the things that has changed, we got some outstanding young people in this legislative class quadrennium this time, and they, you know, one of the first votes they had to take was the fuel tax, and they
welcome to Montgomery, huh? That's a trial by fire,
right? And there was some real hesitation on it, but they came through, and with over 30 other states, we now have the ability to compete with infrastructure and economic development. We're getting off the subject.
Yeah, well, we'll get back. Oh, we're going to get to that in a second. So, with the lottery, people rightly so, Alabamians get confused sometimes what we're talking about, because people, I think a lot of folks just want a constitutional amendment to be able to vote on a lottery. But then you go, well, what kind of lottery? And they go, I don't know, lottery.
Yeah, well, you had the paper, you know, that was proposed. I think that was one of the things. That was just such a big leap to be something totally different than what we've talked about. I think that was one of the problems with that particular issue.
Wait, we have paper lottery, or what I've heard called clean lotto. Mm-hmm. And then the other version has paper lottery, which we go in like Florida, right? It'd be kind of like Florida, and you have a scratch-off thing or fill in the blanks for your numbers. But then there was this electronic lottery part of it, and to me that was not as much about keeping up with the times and being it was to facilitate the legacy dog tracks to be able to have some kind of video lottery.
All right.
Is that correct?
Yeah. I'm sure most people, this issue has been discussed so much, I realize that you've got Green Track, you've got Macon County, you've got others that are involved in it, and they want to be involved in it in some fashion, and they want to place it to table when the negotiations are going on. So that's really the problem and the hang-up, as I see it right now, and has been consistently, is everybody wants some of the action, and you can't blame them.
Yeah, but everybody wants some of the action when you're talking about the Portage Bandit Creek Indians, you're talking about the legacy dog tracks. Also, those that want part of the action are all the action to go to ETF, and those that are asking, hey, can we have some of this in the general fund? So there's another, I mean, there's groups of y'all.
Complicates it even further.
But the regular citizen, your constituents, I don't know, you know them better than anybody, but I bet you a bunch of them just want to have a CSCA on the ballot that lets them vote on a lottery.
I've had people that tell me they never would bother to go buy a lottery ticket, but they think the people ought to have a right to vote on it.
You know, I may be one of those people, although I bought lottery tickets in the past. It's not, gambling's not my thing. But yeah, I think, there are people asking for it. And the polling that has come out since the 90s, since it failed back, and that's a whole other story, but is showing that 60%+ of Alabamians wanted to vote on a lottery.
Yeah.
Usually, if y'all get numbers like that as elected officials, you say, "Hey, y'all, constituents want to do this. We got to get this going."
Yeah. But good observation.
Yes, but this is one of these places where it's not working that way. Usually, if y'all had that kind of support out there and something polling, this would move through quickly.
Well, the people who feel like they would be left out at this point have enough clout to keep it from passing unless they are involved with it and have an opportunity to participate in it. So that's a standoff, and that's just where we are.
So you're saying out of these different players, whether it be the allocation side where money goes ETF or general fund or legacy dog tracks, Portage Bandit Creek Indians, somebody's got to blink here before we would see
that's a good description of it. Yes, sir.
So if there's no blink, there's no constitutional amendment that shows up on the ballot.
Correct.
Coming back, see, the wisdom I'm talking about, this is why I always enjoy talking to you. So, Representative Steve McMillan, our guest, we'll come back. We'll get some of your text questions at 343-0106. Continue our discussion about sessions so far and all the issues you're dealing with in Montgomery. And by the way, if you didn't catch at the beginning of the show, good news, ALDOT has said good to go for the Dauphin Island Bridge. You can travel both north and southbound on and off the island right now. Things are okay. They did the look over where the barge hit the bridge, and you're good to go. So, good news there. 12:30, we'll check news and Dr. Bill's forecast, and then we're coming right back. Y'all stay close.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Guest in studio, District 95 Representative Steve McMillan. All right, I want to ask this one. Matthew's question from the text line. This is interesting. It's like a general idea. He said, the Alabama legislature needs to learn a business term that's progress over perfection. The legislature wants things perfect, but trying to get perfection stops progress. That's Matthew on the text line. What do you think about that?
There may be some merit to that. There may be some merit to that. But there's always two sides to the issue. And in Montgomery, there's several sides to some
more
issues.
More than two so sides. Yeah.
You got to consider the diversity of the makeup of the legislature, the age of the people that are serving, and that sort of thing. Impacts on legislation that's introduced as well as passed.
That's a good point too. People often will get in these discussions and talk radio about something that's been pre-filed bill or something just got filed, and all the hysterics go on. But I know from people that will tell me that, well, that you can get all hyped up about it. That bill's not going to ever pass. Mm-hmm. I mean, y'all can do a bunch of talking about it, and the TV news can lead with, look at this pre-filed bill, but it's nothing that's ever going to pass.
It's going to be interesting to see how many total bills are going to be introduced this session, and it's been interesting to watch it through the years. The first year of the quadrennium, when right after the election, when we have so many that have been out campaigning and promising people that they would do this bill or that bill or whatever somebody was interested in at the time. And they come up there and introduce all these bills thinking they're going to change the world and satisfy all those people that they told they would go up and pass that bill. And then they find out it just doesn't work that way. So we pass about 10% of the legislation that's introduced, and that includes local bills. So general bills.
So 10% of what gets filed.
Roughly. Mm-hmm.
So that's a good benchmark and a measure to look out there. So y'all listen to that. What's realistic? So, you know, if I go down, running down through a line of pre-filed bills or filed bills, realize the majority of those things aren't going to see becoming the law.
The system is designed to stop bad legislation, not necessarily pass good legislation.
I think I'd rather have it that way.
It works pretty well, everything considered. For example, we've had in the Senate 225 bills introduced as of this week, in the House 310, in the Senate of the 225 introduced, 33 have passed, in the House of the 310 introduced, 25 have passed. But now that's from a timing perspective.
Right.
The House has not had an opportunity, just from a time perspective, to pass any Senate bills.
So that doesn't mean they won't get passed.
They'll start passing this next week, more than likely.
What about we talked about Lotto and what's to be done there. There's this, and Governor Ivey's called for a study to be done on gambling in the state, lottery in the state. I have my problems with it. I think we've had enough time to study it, but I will say, if we're talking about the compact that's been offered by the Portage Bandit Creek Indians, have y'all gotten something to look at? Y'all have a document on your desk that says, here's the offer?
No, I have not seen it. There may be others that have. The committees that would work on that
There has been something delivered, you believe? Like, here it is. Here's the 50-page document that shows what we want.
I've not seen it. There may be others that have, like the members of those particular committees that would deal with it, but I'm not aware of any particular written agreement.
So when the governor says she's got this task force and panel to study gambling, is it gambling overall? Is it this compact? How do you understand it? What do you think
my understanding, and I want to preface this, it may not be exactly accurate. she just wants them to look at potential revenue and the process of how it would work. Recommendation on a gaming commission, I would think, would be one of the top priorities. And I know most of the people that she's appointed, and they really are class, intelligent, good people.
One's from down here. I know those folks, and I agree.
Well, you got three from down here. So you or maybe even four. I can't remember.
I know three. But we've got folks from here. Finally, something that actually has some representation from South Alabama. Don't get a lot of that out of Montgomery. But
we're working to correct that.
And I appreciate that. And we're all behind you because we need it. But they're going to study this. But I'm just going to guess for a second here. Let's say we're really looking at this compact that's offered by the Porch Bandit Creek Indians, which essentially I've talked to Robert McGee on the show. He's had his voice on here. We've talked about it. Is a monopoly. Is a Class 3 gaming monopoly for the Porch Bandit Creek Indians. Is that fair to say? And they're the advertising that's run, the talk about it, and Robert McGee on the show, the number of $1 billion for Alabama comes up. How do you understand it? Are we getting a big check for $1 billion? How's this supposed to work? Are y'all going to see?
It's my understanding that they would buy licensing somewhere in the neighborhood of $350 million, if I'm not mistaken. I'm going from memory,
right?
And then there would be somewhere in the neighborhood of $250 million or so that would
maybe
about half, close to half of it, I think, would be allocated for two more casinos in North Alabama.
Right. Birmingham, then somewhere up like Scottsboro or something up there?
Decatur, Madison County.
Decatur, okay, area, over towards Huntsville.
Yeah, in that general vicinity.
Okay. So with that, though, they would have exclusive gaming rights. There wouldn't and that's kind of the different thing. The Porch Band on tribal lands, my attitude's always been in discussions. People are worried about it. I said they're on their land, they're doing their thing. But this changes it, because those places that they would put Class 3 gaming, as Robert McGee described to me, those are not tribal lands.
That's correct. That's,
they're just real estate.
That's my understanding.
That changes a lot. You know, Representative McMillan, that changes a lot. That's a big change in the discussion.
Yeah.
Now,
there are always rumors about O1, what's going to happen there.
Yeah, that's what I was going to get there, because, that's your backyard.
Mm-hmm.
I asked Robert McGee about that. He said there was no... Robert McGee, he said that there were no plans. Okay? When I asked him about that, he said it was going to be a... But, listen, that question gets asked. But then there's... But that's almost like details question. The big question is, would a legislature that can't seem to decide... We talked about all the players for a clean lottery versus electronic lottery versus ETF versus general fund. How are we going to agree on Class 3 gaming monopoly in the state?
I don't think we will, not in this quadrennium.
And that's the problem, because after this session, we're getting close enough to election time that...
Exactly.
If it doesn't get... help me with the wisdom here. If it's not done in the first two sessions...
Controversy is usually avoided.
So y'all use that as a measure there. If something's going to get done... Like, would there be a chance the gas tax would have come up in the third or fourth session of a quadrennium?
No, I doubt it. Because it didn't last time.
Right. So something like this wouldn't either. So if it doesn't happen now, not only does it mean... correct me, I'm trying to understand. With the governor putting a chill on this or other groups putting a chill, if it doesn't happen, a lottery discussion or a vote for a CA in this session... As we go into the next session and the session after that, it gets a less and less chance.
More difficult, without a doubt.
So it's for those
issues like this sometimes just have to simmer a little while.
Oh my gosh, Representative,
better description.
They've been simmering since '92 on this lottery thing.
Give you an example on the fuel tax. The speaker almost single-handedly took it upon himself to travel around the state prior to being speaker.
Mm-hmm.
He was traveling around the state. He came to met with us in Mobile and Baldwin, had public meetings explaining the need and answering questions, and he had to do that for several years. And then he picked up some assistance from other people and able to work out some of the differences and was able to pass it. But it took a while.
But can't I say that there's been a long history of this lottery discussion?
No doubt about
I remember 92 in the last. I mean, now is it different? Does it look a little different than it did back then? Sure, but the general idea of people in Alabama participating in a state-run lottery has been around for
That's
decades.
Not a new concept.
No, no, it's not. All right, come back from the break. I want to talk a little more about this. And also, though, some of the big things that you're looking at and talking about in Montgomery, mental health has become a we've talked about it.
Front burner issue.
Front burner issue. We'll talk about that when we return. Representative District 95, Steve McMillan, our guest. Coming right back, we'll grab your text and calls at 343-0106.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, 1247 FM Talk 106.5. Tonight, 6:30, Crew of Columbus gets things rolling downtown. Parades start rolling in Fairhope, 6:45. By the way, tomorrow, parades everywhere in Mobile and Baldwin County. We will be driving in the floral parade along with folks from St. Jude's and the Joy of Life Ball. We're going to be right there where their float is and their and the vehicle with the King and Queen. So say hello to us. We got a bunch of throws. I was getting throws earlier, and I'm not even going to say the place I was, but I was at one of the local Mardi Gras suppliers when the word went out that they ran out of moon pies. Have y'all ever seen the old Godzilla movies where the people ran through the streets of Tokyo screaming? That's very similar to what happened at this place. When I heard it was like, no moon pies. No, what do you mean no moon pies? Ah! So it's been busy out there. But I got the thrones. We're set up and ready to go for the floral parade tomorrow. And we'll see you there. And just wave to us. Got some good throws. And we'll be throwing them out. Just the only two windows in that van are right up front. So get up front and get your throws. All right. Y'all got parades going in Foley tomorrow, too. You got, I mean, we're parading from District 95 to District 105 to District 101.
Popular.
It's Mardi Gras things catching on.
Good excuse for fun.
That's right. Like I need one, but I'll take an excuse if I can get it. All right. If you're just joining us, talking to Representative Steve McMillan, District 95, talking about sessions so far and what's coming up. And you said it to me when you walked in here. You said, and you said it again, front burner issue is mental health. What does that specifically mean? How can people listen to us know? Mental health means what?
It's kind of interesting that, and I really can't tell you the roots of where it all started, because there's been concern. Searcy closing, for example.
Yes.
And the facility, some of the facilities in Tuscaloosa and other places. And we went from institutions to group homes to community homes and that sort of thing. I won't say whether that worked or not because I don't really know.
But to me, though, it seemed like it was shifting the burden from the state to county and municipal.
A lot of people looked at it that way. And then another thing that was impacted by that policy was jails became mental health institutions in many cases.
Sheriffs will sit in here and tell you exactly
yeah,
that.
Absolutely, and nothing to really address it. And they complained about it. That's probably the number one source of complaint about this situation was initially the sheriffs and the counties because they were having to pick up the tabs and not even being able to help. Alabama has the lowest percentage of counselors and therapists, or counselors slash therapist combination. I'm not going to try to distinguish okay. which is which.
All right.
But we have the fewest per capita per thousand of any state in the nation, which really adds to the issue.
Is that because there's not demand or there's people not doing it?
That's a good question. I really can't answer that question. But
what are y'all tasked with? What can y'all do in the House of Representatives dealing with mental health?
I'll give you an example. There are really several different areas that we're looking at and that do need attention. It's not just an issue of let's go see if we can find a problem. The problem's there.
Right.
Students in school. Prisoners, as we've talked about, not only in jails but in state facilities, and that's part of the federal court order, as I understand it, is to correct that situation.
That's one of the things Byron Thompson said we got to do.
Right, correct. And then you got the law enforcement and first responders. I was shocked the other day the statement was made that there are more law enforcement succumbed to suicide than to any other cause of death. And I was shocked to hear that. There's another real serious need for some counseling.
PTSD and in those jobs.
Yeah. And it's a tough job, no doubt about it. We need to help them.
Absolutely. So you talk about these needs here. So what do we do as a state? Do we go back to a system like we had before? Is there any way to is it going to be state-provided? Are we going to facilitate private? How do we do this?
We'll have to address them as separate issues because of the fact that you've got the county schools statewide, counties statewide. All of them have a similar problem, some worse than others. So it's going to be, it'll have to be a statewide issue. The real thing, I think, as I see it, is training and getting the therapists and counselors on board.
And so would the state incentivize the pay? Or, I mean, if you talk about the low number, the percentage where it is in Alabama for therapists and counselors, it seems like the market would be there, but the private sector hadn't moved in to you see what I'm saying? I'm trying to understand why they're not there.
That's a problem. I mean, that's the key to it. If we can't get the personnel and the people that have the credentials and the knowledge and the experience to address the problem, then you haven't solved the problem. Just going out and designating, you know, I could say, Sean, you'd be a good therapist.
No, you would never say that.
School in the morning.
Right. But,
so, you know, we got to train people, which is going to take time. I think the other day somebody told me there were 1,400 schools in the state of Alabama. So it's kind of like, are you going to have one counselor per 15 schools? Or, you know, that I think the Department of Education is targeting 250, I think it is, 240 to try to have trained and ready to go.
So we don't have those at all in schools now?
You got them, but they're so stretched and they do different things. You don't be confused when I say counsel. I'm not talking about somebody that works to help you get a scholarship. I'm talking about somebody that's there.
Mental health.
With a teenager that's got an issue.
The way you'd have a nurse or nurse practitioner on campus, you're having that on mental health.
Something to that effect, and somebody that would have to float around at least initially from school to school. We're working on some things that are pretty optimistic. It'd be premature to talk about it, but we've got one or two things that we can afford that will work, proven to work.
But y'all, I mean, you just said earlier, front burner issue. So this is y'all are talking about this in the House.
Oh yeah, it'll be in the budget, Education Trust Fund budget, no doubt about it.
So that's you said no doubt about it. Okay, right. That's good. That's something that's going to happen. In the world of Montgomery, where there's a lot of maybes, it sounds like that's not a maybe.
Not, absolutely not.
Let's talk about the other part when we talk about mental health, and you mentioned one part of that being prisons and dealing with the mental health issues there, part of the requirements from the judge there. What about the other part, the brick and mortar? And I know that's not the majority of this. It's staffing costs and mental health, but the easier thing for people to think about and discuss is building new prisons. Is this something that will be taken on in the House or the Senate? Or is it going
to
be the executive branch doing something?
It'll have to
be. Well, what do you think about that? People talk about, well, Governor Ivey could enter into a contract with a private entity that builds a prison. It wouldn't be a private prison. They build it, and then, I guess, we, the people, lease it from them, put ADOC in there.
That's one of the things, the main thing that you hear more than anything else is it would be a process where there would probably be three facilities that would be staffed and operated by the state.
Okay, but those be three new, they're new buildings.
That belong to third parties.
Right, and we'd just be renting the space from them.
Correct.
In some long-term contract or whatever. Right. But yeah, and I think it will get confused. People say, well, that's a private prison. It'd be a privately owned prison, but it'd be run by Alabama Department of Corrections.
That's my understanding.
And help me understand this as well, that I've been told that one of the big costs with having our legacy facilities, we'll call it that, legacy facilities, is the way they're designed. It takes more corrections officers to watch X number of prisoners than if you used a high-tech system.
They think they can have a huge savings in personnel cost with newly designed and operated facilities.
And we're not talking about even firing people, but we're looking at overtime costs right now in the system that have been very high.
And one of the several things they're looking at as far as these facilities, if they occur, and I think what the governor's waiting on now is proposals from private entities that would go around and build one or all three, I would presume. The middle part of the state would be staffed by a facility for medical prisoners with medical issues.
But so this could, y'all will be dealing with one part of this in the House and Senate. Of this, we'll call it all prison reform.
We'd have to appropriate the money to lease the facility.
Okay, that's right. So even though maybe the executive branch could sign the contract with the private entity to build the facility, but y'all in the House and Senate would have to, especially the House, purse strings, y'all would have to say, okay, we can pay rent? Is that?
That's correct.
I mean, I know I'm overly simplifying it, but
I haven't seen it. There's not a written proposal. I think the three entities that are looking at it and have to report, I think, in April maybe. The end of April, about what they would do. Just have to wait and see about that.
And you have session goes until?
Probably early May.
Okay, so pretty close to the end of session.
Well, the option is to wait and let Judge Martin Thompson do it. And that would, you know.
This is just a voice as one citizen. I'm not speaking for, I'm just speaking as Sean Sullivan, Alabamian. Y'all don't let that happen.
No, absolutely not.
I looked at what happened in California. I want no part of that.
Nor do we.
My goodness. All right. Next time we talk, I'm going to come up and talk to you in Montgomery. All right?
Super.
That's the deal. All right. It's always a pleasure. Thank you for coming in.
Enjoyed it. I'd like to come back and talk about census and...
Yeah, we ran out of time.
Teacher shortage and other things.
Well, we've got... you and I have like six things on our stack, so either you come back in studio on a Monday or Friday, or I'll just come to Montgomery and we'll talk about it up there.
That'd be great.
All right.
If you come this time, I'd like to try to set you up in the State House, too, because it'd be more convenient for you and the...
As long as they got good internet. I think we were in Ledbetter's office last year. Maybe go back in there. It's always a treat to talk to Representative Steve McMillan, District 95. Hey, coming back next hour, what about the news of the Chapter 11 filing for BSA National? How does it affect scouting right here in our area? We talked about that with William Bryant from the Mobile Area Council. Next on Midday Mobile.